Welcome to Back to Health with Dr. Cale Copeland. He has been a chiropractic provider to the Victoria Grizzlies Junior A Hockey Club for 9 seasons and involved in healthcare for over 2 decades. Get ready to be inspired to greater vitality, performance, energy, and health as he interviews experts every 2 weeks. Now here's Dr. Cale.
Hey everybody. This is Dr. Cale Copeland, and I'm your host for Back to Health. Thanks for listening. This is episode number 2, and I'm pumped to be speaking with Dr. James Chestnut, a world-renowned speaker, researcher, leader, and innovator on the topic of human well-being. Now, before I introduce Dr. James, just a reminder that if you have any questions or require assistance, you can always reach us here at Victoria Family Chiropractic at 250-592-5553 or online at www.vfchiro.com. That's V as in Victoria, F as in family, CHIRO.com. So Dr. James Chestnut has devoted his life to the implementation of evidence-based healthcare based on identifying the stressors causing illness. He holds a degree in physical education, a master's in exercise physiology, is a doctor of chiropractic, and holds a postgraduate certification in wellness lifestyle. Dr. Chestnut has received numerous academic and professional awards of distinction. Since graduating chiropractic school, Dr. Chestnut has written 6 books, one of which is amongst the best-selling chiropractic books in history. His latest book, Live Right for Your Species Type, is considered the gold standard evidence-based argument that unhealthy lifestyle stressors lead to states of adaptive illness, not as a result of our genes. Dr. James educates chiropractors around the world with his postgraduate evidence-based programs. He presently holds the position of chair of the ICA Council on Wellness Lifestyle Science, and he's a member of the advisory panel of the Australian Spinal Research Foundation. He's the owner of Innate Choice, which is an evidence-based supplement company which we use. Fantastic stuff, by the way. And the online Eat Well, Move Well, Think Well 90-Day Innate Lifestyle Plan. His efforts have influenced thousands of chiropractors around the world, and through them, millions of patients worldwide. For more information, please visit www.eatwellmovewellthinkwell.com. Dr. James, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Awesome. I'm excited for our listeners, and I'm excited too, because I've got some great questions for you. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Beautiful. So listen, where did this obsession come with health and well-being? Where did it come from? What created it?
Well, I don't know if it's an obsession. That doesn't sound very healthy. Maybe it's a passion, Gail. I don't know. To be honest, I don't think that my passion, or maybe any passion for that matter, is created. I think it's sort of an evolution over years of learning and experience.
Right.
In my worldview, I'm just not sure what could be more important than being healthy and happy. I consider health and happiness the greatest assets for, or perhaps the most important variables determining my quality and quantity of life. In fact, everybody's quality and quantity of life. And, I love life. I always have. I consider it a gift. And I've always considered it a worthwhile endeavor to study how to make the most of this gift of life and to help others to do the same. So I guess when I say that, maybe it's a mission and a passion now that I think about it.
Awesome. Yeah, it's health's a big deal, right? And I guess you only know that when you don't have it. So, okay, good stuff. Okay, so you've got successful businesses, you're an author, you're a speaker, you're married, you have kids. You know, what enables you to thrive, physically and mentally under these conditions? How do you do that?
Well, I follow my own evidence-based advice. I eat well, move well, and think well, and I live right for my species type. So I express health and happiness, which is the natural – those are the natural states for any living thing. We're genetically designed to be healthy and happy. So I think as long as you do the right things, you're going to get the right result. I suppose certainly there have been times of exhaustion. I've worked on many occasions, 25 or 30 days in a row over the years. I used to travel 3 or 5 weekends, to lecture all over the world. As you know, I did that for well over a decade. My schedule's not quite as hectic anymore. And to be honest, I'm actually very certain that following my own advice was the only way I could have maintained my health through all those endeavors and that workload. And so the other thing I did was, I did travel weekends, but I was able to create balance. I was at virtually every school play, concert, or after school game during the week. As my kids got older, I was able to help coach. I ensured my wife always knew that, she and the kids and our family were my top priority. And I was always willing to change my schedule or do whatever was necessary to make sure everybody understood my family came first.
That's awesome.
I actually used to hold regular family meetings, and we discussed the pros and cons of my schedule, of my traveling versus me staying at home, where we kind of do a family cost-benefit analysis about, well, at least once a year. We sort of decide, and so, you know, the benefits, you know, obviously the costs were that I was away on a lot of weekends and you know, pretty busy.
Yeah.
But, you know, the benefits were that, you know, I was able to fulfill my passion and my mission. I think everyone in the family understood the benefits of the work I was doing in terms of, you know, the effects on thousands of practitioners and through them millions of patients, as you talked about earlier.
Yep.
And, you know, the feedback I've had over the years has been incredible. And then, you know, there was the bonus things like the trips to Hawaii every year. You know, my family came to Australia with me a few times when I was down there lecturing, been in New Zealand, you know, London, Edinburgh. So, you know, my kids are in private school. You know, there was quite a few benefits. And so when we sat down and kind of talked about it, everyone sort of agreed that the benefits outweighed the cost. But I think they also felt like they had input. And you know, certainly they understood that, you know, they came first. And I think that helped them to realize, well, actually, you know, there are the benefits do outweigh the cost. So, yeah, let's keep,
you know,
sending Dad out there to go to work.
You know, I'm just taking notes here. Are you okay if I call you James?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I'm just taking some notes here because a couple things kind of stood out to me there that, you know, I noticed that you mentioned balance. You know, you talked about, yeah, you've worked really hard, but you had the ability to come home and have balance. And I think that's, it sounds to me like, I don't know if you would agree, was that a factor in you being able to maintain and do all these things you did?
Well, it was a factor in me maintaining a happy marriage and making sure my kids knew they were loved and a priority and that, and, you know, I mean, so for me, I think, I just, you know, I guess balance is a difficult thing to define, really.
Yeah, it is.
I think what you have to do is, like, there's no balance for me. My family's first. There's no balance at all. That's it for me. And so everything else is secondary to me. However, you know, you can't always balance out the hours of the day.
Yeah.
Obviously, we have to go to work and there's other things too. So for me, it was just making sure that everybody understood that they were the priority and then that they felt like they had some input into it.
Yeah.
I think that's a big part of it.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, and this is what gets me so fired up about these podcasts is I get to talk to these amazing people, but it's those little snippets in between the words. And, you know, so I heard the balance, I heard the respect and the love and the family. And I think that when I do these talks, that's kind of the stuff I'm wanting to get is that, you know, you've got a great family life where there's respect and there's love and people feel heard. And that's awesome. So that's really cool. And I'm sure we'll get into some of the other things as we move on here. But that's really cool. I'm really glad you shared that. Okay, so I guess the next question I have for you was, you know, you've observed humans and you've read tons of research, more than the average person. You know, what would you say the key traits are of the healthiest and most successful humans or people?
Well, I mean, that's really what my latest book is, like Live Right for Your Species type. And so the truth is that the things that are the key traits for humans are the same traits that are key for any species. You know, we're all like we're mammals. So
yep.
The truth is that humans, like any species, we have to live right for our species type. We have to eat, move, think, and socially interact according to what our genome requires to epigenetically express health and prevent illness. I mean, it's really a simple formula. What we need is written on our genome. You know, what nutrients that species requires to consume as part of their diet, that's written on their genome. That's why, you know, panda bears eat different things than grizzly bears. It's because they have a different genome and they require different things. So also written on the genome is how much exercise is required to stimulate their bodies and minds to express health. What kind of social interactions? Some animals are sort of pack animals or tribe animals, and other animals are solitary. And so every species has what it requires written on its genome. And so what I've done is said, okay, well, clearly that's true in biology for every animal species. Why would it not be true for humans? And in fact, it is. But I mean, I remember being interviewed. I get this question a lot, Cale, and I remember being interviewed years ago in New York for a radio program. And we were just kind of, I was at the time I was talking about the importance of dopamine and pleasure in people's behaviors, because it's all about lifestyle, it's all about behaviors. And he we were talking about what's driving behaviors, and then this question came up. And at the time I said, well, healthy people, really, if you want to make it really simple, healthy people have healthy sources of pleasure, and unhealthy people have unhealthy sources of pleasure.
Wow.
All humans are pleasure addicts. We are genetically programmed to seek pleasure. We need that dopamine in order to make life feel like it's worth living. So it's seeking pleasures are the greatest drive of human behavior. So if we fulfill that drive with exercise and good healthy food and positive thoughts and relationships, we express health. If we fulfill that drive with sedentary activities and unhealthy food and drink and unhealthy, you know, other pleasures like gambling or drugs or pornography, then if we have unhealthy relationships, then we express sickness. It's really not that complicated. But at the end of the day, everybody is seeking pleasure. Everybody wants to have pleasure. Yep. So you do that with healthy activities, you're healthy. You fill it with unhealthy ones, you're sick.
Isn't that that's awesome? And I guess you know where my mind's going with this. I heard you say a couple things that are like when you say healthy relationships. I mean, I guess that's a fairly broad topic. Like a healthy relationship. What are some foundations of healthy relationships that humans need?
Well, as they define in the book, I mean, healthy relationships are simple to me. They are relationships where both or all people, depending how many there are, feel safe, loved, important, and respected. And so it doesn't matter if it's a romantic relationship or a business relationship. If you feel safe, loved, important, and appreciated or respected, then that's going to be a relationship that fulfills your needs. And that's why we have relationships. That's what we seek from relationships. And if any of those things are missing, and, you know, you can't feel safe in a relationship where someone's dishonest. In the end, it breaks down to you have to have individual integrity, honest, kind, generous, hardworking, and tolerant. And then you need to develop relationships where you make sure the other parties feel safe, loved, important, and appreciated.
Oh, that's great stuff. I mean, I know as a chiropractor, you know, I want the best for my patients, and it's really nice to hear from a researcher standpoint too. There's so many other things that influence health, and things like your behaviors and your relationships, I believe to be big, and it's great to hear research supporting that. So, that's awesome stuff. Yeah, I really appreciate that, James. Okay, you know, this is another. Tricky one, but I'm sure you've had some challenges in life. I mean, it's, you know, you're traveling the globe and all these things. What's enabled you to overcome challenges? Because, you know, oftentimes people get hit with difficult times and it can be really hard to overcome. And so how have you done that? How have you turned those into situations where you seem to grow from them?
I'm one of these people who don't necessarily believe that you grow from challenges. You grow from your response to a challenge. Some people get crushed by a challenge. And so, everybody has challenges. That's one of the things I think you realize as you get a little bit older in life is that everybody's got something going on almost all the time, right?
So yeah, for sure.
It really depends what you – are you going to focus on problems or are you going to focus on solutions? And for me, it's always about integrity and focusing on solutions. So I just never feel sorry for myself. And I never ask, why me? I always ask, what next? And I've just sort of, that's been my mantra for as long as I can remember. And I always make sure that I understand that, you know, I'm not getting bombed in Syria. Like, let's be honest. I really have first world problems for the most part. My kids are healthy. My wife is healthy and I'm healthy. And so other than that, I'm just not really sure what I have to whine about. I mean, yes, I've had some things that, you know, I can jerk a few tears and make people just kind of go, oh, wow, with some of the things I've been through. But honestly, none of them involved the health of my family. So
yeah.
I've always, you know, and I've always had a roof over my head and enough to eat. And so, you know, I go home to a wife that I love and adore and children I'm proud of and that I love and adore. And they make me feel, you know, loved and adored and appreciated. So for me, it's really hard to care too much about anything else.
Oh, isn't that just amazing? So it's that whole, it's attitude, right? I mean, attitude plays a role in your health. I mean, it's that's huge, isn't it? Huge.
Attitude is everything, because adversity, you know, as I sort of say in the book, when you study happiness or contentment or quality of life, the happiest people, you could never determine who the healthiest people were by the events that they've gone through in their life. Like, happy people aren't the ones who don't have adversity.
Yeah.
And unhappy people aren't the ones who had a lot of adversity. It's there's no predictive value in that at all. All the predictive value is in how people respond to adversity, how they talk to themselves. Are they grateful every day? You know, are they focusing on those solutions instead of problems? Do they have, you know, have they developed their own integrity enough that they can have self-esteem and like themselves and trust themselves? And so, you know, that's a huge part of it. That's the huge part of Think Well. And so, you know, that's a, you know, Think Well is the longest part of Eat Well, Move Well, Think Well in the book, in terms of, just because it's there's a lot to it, but
yeah, for sure.
It's actually everything. How we think determines our cravings, our behaviors, our moods. It's huge.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, it's hard not to get really excited and you know, on a show like this, we only have so much time, but boy, is that ever fantastic stuff. I love hearing these little gems. You know, I guess this kind of leads into my next question. You know, my question was, you know, what beliefs or what kind of foundational beliefs have fueled your success? And I guess one of them we just heard there was that this whole idea that, you know, I'm moving forward and I'm really grateful for my life and making an impact. But are there any other beliefs that sort of core to you that you think have been part of your success and your health?
Well, I believe, at least for me, you know, life is a meritocracy. I believe that hard work is huge.
Yeah.
But I'm also understand that many people will work way harder than me for way longer and have less because I was born with the playing field slanted in my favor, you know.
Yeah. Do you mean what, being born in North America?
Well, I just
America,
mean
or?
I was born into a place where I've had enough to eat. I don't have war to deal with.
Yeah.
I've had, honestly, all of us here have had more opportunity than most who will ever live on Earth, ever. And so for me, I just recognize that the playing field is slanted in my favor, which means that for me, life and success are meritocracies. They're going to be based on what I do. Now, some people have obstacles that no matter how hard they work, they're just almost impossible to overcome. But that's not me. So I know that if I work hard, it will pay off. And so the first thing I've always worked hard on is myself. I have to have integrity. I have to make sure I'm a decent human being that can admire myself.
Yep.
And so that's where I think all success comes from. In my mind, I have no excuse to fail. If I believe I have integrity, if I'm honest, kind, generous, hardworking, and tolerant, that success is inevitable. I've never doubted that. I've always been willing, as long as it didn't compromise my integrity, to do whatever's necessary to succeed. And you know, I've always said I would very proudly collect bottles and clean toilets to support my family. I have no ego associated with anything except being a good person and being willing to work hard. So that's always been my attitude.
You know, James, let me ask you a question here. I mean, you know, you and I are both fortunate in the sense that, you know, I'm in a career that I love. I love helping people. And you're in a career that you love having an impact in people's lives. You know, do you feel that having a purpose in life is important to having health? It seems like it would be important, of course, for success. But do you feel that's important in having health, good health?
Well, yeah, mental health and physical. I mean, you can't separate the two. But I always think that the purpose of life is to enrich your own life and the lives of others to the greatest degree possible. We're meant to enjoy this life. It's a gift. So the idea is let's just make it as good for ourselves and everybody else as we can. So, yeah, I mean, that is my purpose. But I think you have purposes in life, but you could probably divide them into different categories, but
yeah, for
me,
sure.
The overall purpose has always been first to be a decent person.
Yeah.
And I think if you accomplish that, then that allows you to go out and accomplish many other things, but it all starts with self.
Isn't that amazing? And it's just how that sets the tone, you know, being a good person, having good relationships, and then you may be apt to make better decisions because your self-esteem is better and so on and so forth. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Okay, let's switch a little bit. You know, some of these questions we've slightly answered, but what are some of your core beliefs about health? I mean, you obviously view health from a different model than maybe the average person or maybe the mainstream. What are some of your main beliefs about health?
Well, I try not to let beliefs or emotion affect my views on health. First of all, I am very scientifically evidence based. So, the truth is, my views are not different at all from any biologist. No biologist thinks that animals go extinct or become endangered because of genes. They all know, of course, it's always environment. It's only the people who study human health and that could even put out such an absurd notion. You know, I always say when all the fish were dying in the Great Lakes and they were washing up on shores with tumors and the birds that ate those fish, their eggs were going brittle and they were dying, what biologist ever would have stood up and said, oh, I know the problem. It's the genes of the fish. and the only solution is to set up hospitals and put radiation and chemotherapy into the lakes. I mean, it would just be absurd, right?
Yeah, it's funny, right?
And so we know that not in the history of species on Earth, not a single species has ever become endangered or had widespread illness or gone extinct due to genes. Yeah. Genes get better over time within a species, not worse. That's biological law. So I'm really not an outlier anywhere except when dealing with the human animals, but that's because most people don't view humans through the proper biological lens. They view them through the allopathic medical sickness lens. But humans are no less sort of genetically programmed for health than any other species. So the notion that we're sick because of bad genes or an inability to regulate our own metabolism or blood pressure, cholesterol – is scientifically absurd, and in fact, it's easily disproven. And
that's got to be fantastic for our listeners too, because you know there are a lot of people that struggle with health out there, and I think a lot of people feel helpless. You know, I think they feel like, well, you know, this is my lot in life, and certainly some people have different challenges, but it's nice to hear that at least from a scientific standpoint, you know, there's hope. That's awesome.
Yeah, there's no other hope. I mean, listen to me. You are the genetic expression of how you eat, move, and think. So your cells and your health and sickness are not random chance. And whether you express health or sickness, there's some variables that determine that. And the main one is how you move and think, or main ones are how you eat, move, and think. There's no question that how the habitat and your choices you make within your habitat are the thing that determine the health of all living organisms.
Wow.
So we can take any healthy organism, whether it's a single cell or a mammal, and put it in a sick environment and it gets sick. And we can take a sick cell or a sick organism and put it in a healthy environment and it gets better.
Wow.
It's not like we haven't done it over and over again. It's irrefutable.
How vital our environment is, you know, not only environment in your head, but I guess, you know, everything. I guess, you know, our environment shapes us greatly and starting with ourselves. But it's just such exciting stuff. Let me ask you a couple more questions here. You're a chiropractor. I mean, I guess that's not your main career right now. But where does chiropractic fit in relationship to human health and human wellness and performance? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, I'm just going to talk about what the literature says because who cares what I think? And
yeah.
But I mean, the literature is clear that. First of all, it's not possible for a mammal, or especially, you know, well, not especially, but in humans, to be healthy without a healthy neuromusculoskeletal system. So the truth is that the linchpin, the main factor determining whether or not someone's bones, muscles, joints are healthy is whether or not those joints and muscles and tendons and ligaments go through a full range of motion against resistance every day.
Okay.
If you take away motion from any part of the neuromusculoskeletal system, it immediately starts to degenerate and get sick.
Wow.
And that has a profound impact not only on the joints themselves, but on the whole body. And of course, the spine is where most of these I'll talk about these receptors or these messages that go to the brain, and where all the limbs, that all goes into the spine. So the reality is that the spine is kind of it's the center, it's the core, it's the most neurologically important. And it's the most important in terms of our ability to move and be comfortable than anything else. So what the research says is that when we move, not only do we keep the tissues healthy, but we send messages called proprioception, which is really neurological signals from movement and lifting things and where our limbs are in space. And those messages go to the parts of our brain that are really important, not just for the coordination of our muscles and our neuromusculoskeletal system, our sensory motor cortex, but it goes to other areas of our brain that really affect our emotions, which is why when people move around, they feel better.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, their brains work better. I mean, the book Spark by Rady is a fantastic source of that. I wrote chapters on this in my book, just talking about the importance of movement and what the research shows. I mean, not only is chiropractic proven to be, you know, the most evidence-based, most effective, most cost-effective intervention for people with spinal pain or back pain or neck pain or, you know, any of these things. I mean, clearly, the evidence is clear on that. But it's also but the reason that is because chiropractic is the only profession who focuses on segmental motion and reestablishing that motion so that the health of the tissues and those neurological communication between the body and the brain, that proprioception, and then the brain can only do and coordinate based on the messages or the information it receives. And you know, this movement or body sense is one of the most important sort of sources of not only sort of information but nutrients that the brain receives. If you stop the body from moving, the brain degenerates. And so yeah. that there's no mystery to it for me. It's just like, look, motion is everything. And people now sit for on average 32 years of their lives. We are devastating our spines with the industrial lifestyle. So,
wow.
You know, chiropractic is important because it gets people moving, and movement is everything. Not only to the tissues that are getting moving themselves, but to the messages that go to the brain, allowing the brain to coordinate not just movement, but, you know, moods and sort of concentration and everything else. So it's simple, but I guess in a way complex once you get into the neurophysiology of it.
Yeah, but it's fascinating stuff. And I think in chiropractic too, and I know in practice, you see people, hey, I'm feeling better. My anxiety is better. I feel more positive. And, you know, I guess that just has to do with their nerves working better and their brains getting better feedback from the body. It's pretty cool stuff.
Well, I mean, if you take someone and get them moving, like, you know, that Rady's book, who's a psychologist, or he might be a psychiatrist, but anyway, I mean, if you look at the studies, right, going for a walk beats antidepressants in terms of helping people feel better.
Wow.
Movement, the pathways of movement are incredible in terms of what they do in the brain and how they affect you through the cerebellum and through the hypothalamic pituitary and the amygdala and all these things. So the parts of the brain that are affected, you know, that are in charge of our emotions are absolutely, profoundly affected by movement. And so what I always say to people is, look, would you be surprised if I told you that if you exercise more that you'd be in a better mood? And they go, no. And I go, well, then why would chiropractic helping you move be any different?
I guess before we close out here, I want to talk a little bit about your book and where listeners can learn more about you. But we've talked about some great stuff in this episode. What are a couple strategies that you know, maybe some concrete strategies people can take away? We've talked about respect and integrity and balance. What are and exercise? What, maybe one to three tips. What could our listeners do to thrive better, you know, mentally, spiritually, physically?
Well, I think the first thing they have to realize is that they're just going to have to live right for their species type. They're just going to have to understand what their bodies and their cells and their brains and their minds require in order to express health. There are resources that we must feed our cells and our bodies and our brains and our minds, and if they're deficient in those things, or if we put toxic things in, there's no way we can express health. So,
right.
I mean, that's really important to understand that. And then once you understand that, you're empowered to realize, wow, if I do the right things, I'll get the right results. So, I mean, again, the term I've trademarked around the world: eat well, move well, think well. If you just focus on eating, honestly, it's so simple. Drink more water, eat more vegetables. You're going to be well on your way.
That's
make sure
awesome.
You take some omega-3 and vitamin D. That's such a probiotic. Those things are so simple and such a huge return, and it's so clear that the research is unequivocal that people are deficient in those things and that it makes a tremendous difference in their well-being, physically and psychologically when they get sufficient. So that's an easy thing to do.
Yep.
And then you've got to move every day. You've got to go for a walk, even if it's out to the end of your driveway and back. Never go a day without going some kind of movement. And start with walking if you're not an exerciser now.
Okay.
It's huge. And on that walk, make sure that you're focusing on things that you're grateful for. You know, as I say in my seminars, I never go to bed ever without thinking about what I'm grateful for. And I never get out of bed ever without thinking about what I'm grateful for.
Wow.
Ever.
Wow.
And so I that's just a habit. When I go for a jog, I have a mantra in my head that, it's perfect health for me. I'm grateful to be strong and free. It's just something I've said for years. But I always tell people, create a rhyme inside your head. And because you're always talking to yourself anyway, and we know from the literature that what you say to yourself has a profound impact on your hormone levels and your autonomic balance. So why not say something positive to yourself all the time? Get in the habit of saying something positive to yourself about yourself and about others all the time.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, it's simple, but it's very effective.
Well, I've always been a big believer in affirmations. So yeah, I mean, you're right. You're talking to yourself all the time. Make it good.
And I always think, I mean, you're not going to sit on your bottom and you know, manifest a good life. What you are going to do, though, is you're going to program your brain to seek out healthy behaviors and healthy sources of pleasure. So that's what talking to yourself does. And what sort of manifestation or affirmations or all these things do, like, you know, the law of sort of attraction isn't that you can attract things to you. It's what you decide to be attracted to. Wow. And so the more you think about things, the more you notice those things and that you will seek those things out and keep them in your life. So I always use the example of, you know, you might, some people say, oh, put a picture of a red car on your wall, you know, if you really want a red car or whatever, which to me is ridiculous. Why would I have a goal of a car? But anyway, so I mean, a material goal is absurd to me. But anyway, so you put that up there, and then all of a sudden people go, yeah, all of a sudden I started seeing more red Corvettes. And I say to them, well, you're not so absurd as to think that that Corvette and the people in that Corvette and the families that they have were just created from your mind all of a sudden? Or is it more likely that since you started focusing on that, that you're now noticing those things in your environment? And they're like, oh yeah, right. And I say, so that's the law of attraction, is that just be very careful about what you allow yourself to be attracted to and what you allow to come into and stay in your life.
Yes.
Be
yes,
very
yes.
selective about what you choose to focus on and you know, move towards and allow to stay in your life.
Holy camole, yes. Okay, James, listen, what an awesome interview. That's just thanks so much. Listen, where can we learn more about your book, the Live Right for Your Species Type, and about you and the stuff that you do?
Well, if it's a practitioner, they should go to thewellnesspractice.com. And if it's someone lay public, they should go to eatwellmovewellthinkwell.com.
Okay. James, listen, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been awesome. Unfortunately, we're out of time. If anyone out there can think of someone who'd benefit from them, please share this podcast. They would appreciate it, I'm sure. Dr. James, thanks again. To all our listeners, thanks for listening, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks for the next edition of Back to Health.
Thanks for listening. We hope you have enjoyed this episode. For more information about Dr. Kale, visit his website, vfchiro.com, where you can read his blog and hit links to his YouTube channel and Facebook page for videos and more. Book an appointment with Dr. Kale today at Victoria Family Chiropractic by calling 250-592-5553 and get started on a path to being your best.